T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
Time for another edition of the Reardon Roundtable. Friday. Now, Mark Reardon on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
I don't know about the rest of my panel here this afternoon, and I think it was, I have to think about who tweeted this out earlier this week. Someone said, it was a celebrity, said, man, the month of April just zipped by, but it was Henry Winkler. I remember now Henry Winkler said, is May just going really, really slowly? And I had to agree with him. I don't know why, but I hear some chortling in the background. Let's introduce the panel here this afternoon. Jane Duker with us, as usual.
Hi.
How are you, Jane?
Oh, doing
on Zoom,
good.
Jeff
doing
Rainford,
good.
The former chief of staff for Mayor Slay, is on the Zoom call as well this afternoon. Jeff, how are you?
Good. I was chortling because I thought it was March. I didn't remember that it was May until today.
I know, and almost the end of May. And panelists, Jeff and Jane, apparently there's no internet in southeastern Missouri because the former lieutenant governor of Missouri, Peter Kinder, is with us this afternoon, but couldn't figure it out, so he's on the phone.
I am here.
And I don't know what that was. Was that a dog or something?
Not my dog.
That was my animal. That was my dog.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah, there you go. You better
shut
that thing
up. My dog is napping peacefully.
Yeah, how are you, Peter?
I'm doing great. My dog is napping peacefully right now.
Yeah, mine are too. I do have to apologize for some confusion with Peter because a week ago he texted me. We were doing the roundtable, and he said, "Look, since you're doing these on the internet now, because he's got an open invitation," he said, "I could do the roundtable." I said, "Book it." And he didn't understand. I think there was some confusion in the text because he thought I meant for next Friday and not today. So yesterday or 2 days ago, I'm promoting it. And what happened? Somebody texted you and said, "Hey, are you on with Reardon tomorrow?"
It's going to work out fine.
All right, that's good. Let's start with you then, Peter Kinder, as we get into this Friday afternoon and the president holding a news conference earlier today, making the insistence that churches, houses of worship, should be open across this country, kind of putting his foot down even over the governor's. What do you make of this?
Well, I'm pleased. I'm very pleased to see the president do that. And it is true that governors have police powers in the states and local officials have police powers that are not present at the federal level. But the president has the Department of Justice. And you may recall, was it about 10 days ago, Attorney General Barr said, look, at the Department of Justice, we are going to review some of these draconian, very severe lockdown orders and restrictions and see whether we believe in some cases they may violate First Amendment and other Bill of Rights protections. And if they do, he indicated, that Attorney General Barr did, that the DOJ might be heard from in court. I was heartened to see the news of Representative David Gregory filing a lawsuit, I think, day before yesterday for a church out in Fenton against St. Louis County and get that into federal court. And I think it's good. Churches should be considered essential. I was also enormously heartened, Mark, to see the news yesterday that the Catholic bishops in the state of Minnesota, joined by the Lutherans, Missouri Synod,
right,
Lutheran leadership, are defying that governor's extraordinary order. And I think this is all a healthy development.
Well, look, I think, Jeff, I'll go to you here next, but you can make it. It's a little inconsistent what's been deemed essential and not. I think we've known that for a couple of months. You can have a situation where these churches, I don't think any of these churches, well, I don't want to say any, because there have been some mistakes made at some of the churches in the South, even up to this point. But look, they want to do it safely. They want to have distancing, but they also feel that this is important to their parishioners or their congregation. I don't have a problem with it, especially since the numbers are trending in such a positive direction right now.
Yeah, I kind of parse things. I'm not a one or the other. I think that the government, you know, one of the things we have is a right to live, right? So the government has a, you know, I have a right not to have somebody cough all over me and kill me with the coronavirus. On the other hand, I agree with you. You know, as long as, you know, during the shutdowns, almost every church was responsible, and some of them, you know, took leadership roles in being responsible. They went on the internet with their services, you know, where they could, they do drive-by communion or whatever. I do think we're at a point where if we can reopen, let's take St. Louis County, they're going to reopen day camps in a couple of weeks. I think they're going to open up swimming pools. They're going to open up restaurants and other things. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be opening up churches now. And I certainly hope that all pastors, not just the responsible ones, take seriously the responsibility that they have to their parishioners to treat them carefully and to take the precautions. But I see no reason why we shouldn't be opening up churches right now.
Jane? Can Jane hear me, or did we effectively cut her off this afternoon?
Is that better? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I mean, I agree with Jeff, and I think we can open things safely, and we have to be careful, and we have to watch the numbers. I disagree that the president would have the ability to tell the governors to do something. I think he could. You're right. He can have the Department of Justice sue these people and try to say they're violating the First Amendment. You know, that's different than him saying that he has the legal authority to just, you know, shut governors down. The only reason he would have it is if it's unconstitutional. And a court will look at that and see if, you know, the health concerns trump the First Amendment. Your First Amendment rights are not absolute. So, I mean, that's a different issue. And I'm not saying there isn't a First Amendment claim. I'm just saying the governor doesn't have power to shut down the governors.
Let me play Dr. Burks here this afternoon. Hang on, panel. Dave's back in the studio, and you know, this was a news conference that for the first time in a couple of weeks, because we haven't had the task force there, including Dr. Fauci and Dr. Burks. Well, Dr. Burks was there this morning. Here's what she said on the issue of churches reopening.
I think each one of the leaders in the faith community should be in touch with their local health departments so that they can communicate to their congregants. Certainly people that have significant comorbidities, we want them protected. I know those houses of worship want to protect them. And so really ensuring that maybe items, maybe they can't go this week if there's high number of COVID cases, maybe they wait another week. But there is a way to social distance like you are here in places of worship. And I think what we're trying to say with the CDC guidance is there's a way for us to work together to have social distancing and safety for people so that we decrease the amount of exposure that anyone would have to an asymptomatic. And I say it that way because I know all of you and all of Americans, if they didn't feel well, they wouldn't go to church that day.
But you know, Peter Kinder, that the way this is going to be portrayed in opinion pieces, op-eds that are being written right now is that the president wants to kill people who go to church. That's essentially what he's trying to do, right?
Well, that may be what certain areas of the media come up with and certain of his opponents. Mark, I want to note the remarkable degree of bipartisan agreement we already have on this show today.
Yeah, that's true.
On this first
that is
topic.
True. Well, that's actually a very good point. And I think as we broaden the, you know, the questions here for the panel, Jane, I'll start with you on this one. One of the things I think that was most significant this week in our news, and it's been something that's been frustrating to me. I kind of went off on it 2 days ago when the story cleared, and I just heard something in our news at the top of the hour. We've been told, now granted, I understand that some of this is unknown. The healthcare professionals don't know all the answers. We're trying to figure out. They knew that the virus could live on surfaces. I've asked this question for weeks. Hey, you know, just because it can live on that surface, does that mean we can get it from the surface? Ask Dr. Garza, ask all kinds of people. Well, yeah, maybe. Well, now we know you really can't that much. There's a minimal exposure. I think that is one of the biggest things to happen in the last couple of months? Because we've all walked around with our shirts opening doors. And I went to Fritz's Frozen Custard in St. Peter's this morning. Unfortunately, gang, you can't have any because we're not in the studio. If you were, you'd be given that benefit. But I bring it up because they have the tables out there with police tape. And I don't think there's any reason to have something like that now that we know that the CDC says that there's a minimal risk. Doesn't that open up a lot of possibilities for businesses moving forward? Jane, you got to unmute yourself. I know it's better this way when you're muted, but I think you have to unmute yourself. I'm not sure. Dave will have to tell me. Dave, I can't hear her. I'm not sure what's going on. Yeah, she's unmuted, but we can't hear her. Jeff, go ahead. Jump in here. I'm not sure what's going
Everybody
on. There you
are.
All right. Well,
okay.
You know, the one thing, they call this the novel coronavirus because in the beginning, they just didn't know. Now, I think that what happened is a lot of medical people basically we're like, we have to beat people over the head. We have to scare the crap out of them or they'll do stupid stuff. So I think that they, rather than giving us a more nuanced approach to what this thing is, they were like, stay home or else. But one of the reasons they did that is there was a lot they didn't know about this thing. That's why it's called novel. So I kind of blame them a little bit for not treating us like adults and telling us like it is and feeling like they had to scare us into taking certain action. But by the same token, they are learning about this thing as they go. And I can tell you that, and we talked about this before, if you overestimate the risk of this thing and you're in the medical profession, your chances of being disgraced are very low. If you underestimate it and a whole bunch of people die, your chances of being disgraced are very high. So, you know, human nature kind of ruled here and it was kind of predictable the way they were going to react to it.
I can tell you personally. Oh, can you hear me?
Yep, we can now. Go ahead.
Oh, good. No, I mean, I can tell you personally, the surface stuff is what kept me up at night. I mean, every time, you know, I mean, everything you touch, I mean, that's what scared me. I mean, so knowing now that that is a low risk of exposure, I think takes a lot of stress out of it. I mean, you know, if you only have to worry about people talking at you, spitting on you, you know what I mean? That is a lot less to worry about than everything you touch. I mean, I was literally walking around with Clorox wipes at the gas station to pick up, you know, to fill my car with gas. And, you know, it's a whole different thing. So I'm glad. I don't know how long they've known this. I'm glad they're telling us that now because I do think it decreases the stress. I think that stresses people out.
I think it's huge. I think, yeah, I don't think there could have been a bigger development this week, and it's still sort of being underplayed. And again, I'm not giving people permission to touch everything and then touch their face. But again, it really, you can do these things and you can have common sense. I've not been the biggest mask proponent, but I understand why we're being asked to do it right now. I've been wearing my mask in public. Jeff Rainford, I think that what we're going to experience right now moving forward, that's what I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, is we look at these numbers in Missouri next week. We look at the numbers in Georgia and some of these other states where the trends are positively. I think we're going to feel very good about entering this summer. Now, I don't know what that holds for the fall, but that's going to leave me a lot more confident than I felt a couple of weeks ago when we played golf because we were pretty pessimistic about everything.
Yeah, I think that it goes two ways, though. I mean, I think there's still a lot of people who are afraid. They're afraid to go back to work. They're afraid to go to the stores. They're afraid to go to restaurants or movies or whatever, and they're afraid to get out. And so I think left to our own devices, particularly in the Midwest, I think we will individually forget what the government does, forget what the president says. I think we're going to be careful individually, which I think bodes well for the virus. I think you're going to be right. The question's going to be, you know, will the economic damage continue to mount because we're all too afraid to go out and do commerce? And I think until we somehow figure out a way to reassure people, go ahead and go about your lives with these precautions so we can reopen our economy, so we can get the money moving again. I think that we're going to move slowly as far as more cases, and I think we're going to move slowly economically.
All right, hang tight. Lieutenant Governor, former Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, Jeff Rainford, Jane Duker, all on the panel this afternoon. Much more to go as we get through a Reardon Roundtable for this Friday.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. We have former Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, Jeff Rainford, Jane Duker all on the panel this afternoon. Let's talk a little bit more about the economy, the effects. We had big layoffs here in St. Louis amongst healthcare workers. You have 40 million people unemployed. Peter, I'll start with you on this. Look, I think I'm still rather confused as how some of this is breaking down between blue state lockdown and red state freedom. I would think that a lot of Americans who voted for Hillary Clinton, President Obama, and maybe even in the fall, Joe Biden, if he doesn't stumble over himself even more than he has already, and we'll get to that, would really like to be working again and have their jobs back. So it seems, and this has been very confusing throughout the last few weeks, that the case is made by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial board, one of your favorite places, and others, that this is just all about Trump trying to revive the economy so he's elected again. Did they not understand that people are millions, 40 million people are unemployed in this country right now? And by the way, the early indication on the reopening is those jobs are not coming back. We had, even today in St. Louis, Rainford, Jane, you probably know this, a couple of restaurants in the West End, they're not going to reopen. We're going to see more and more of this. I think the percentage is 15 to 20% of these restaurants are not going to reopen. So, Peter, why is this breaking down so much along political lines still?
Well, it shouldn't. It shouldn't, Mark. We all should want a healthy economy, no matter what time of the year, or what, whether it's an even-numbered year or an odd-numbered year. Open Table did a survey nationwide, and they fear that we may lose one out of four restaurants in America in this pandemic. 600 doctors signed a letter this week saying that the cure can well be and may well be worse than the disease ever was. We set out to flatten the curve, and we successfully flattened the curve, but in the process, we flattened the hospitals. And hospitals, I saw BJC furloughed 3,000 more people this week. Hospitals all over America have. People are afraid to go get routine checkups, cancer screenings. Chemo has been delayed. All kinds of examinations, treatments for arthritis and other chronic conditions are going untreated, heart attacks and strokes. And we've got to be very, very concerned about mental health, too. We know that one study showed that for every 1% rise in unemployment, you can expect 1,000 suicides. Calls to suicide hotlines are exploding. Small businesses are being crushed, even with all the help that government has tried to extend them. And I think the American people, in a very quintessentially American and distinctly American way, are saying, okay, enough. Let us think for ourselves. Let us act for ourselves. Let us reopen. We will do the distancing. We will wear masks. We will clean many times an hour. But we've got to reopen and be allowed to go to work. And I want to say one more thing. We've got to have liability protection. We've got to have some kind of sensible liability protection for business, or you won't be able to have any kind of a recovery.
True.
If a trial lawyer comes in and says, you only cleaned 15 times an hour, you needed to be cleaning 30 times an hour, and can prevail in a lawsuit like that, no commerce, no business can go forward.
Let me play Ron DeSantis in the rant from a couple of days ago. This plays into the, you know, the calls for the economy to reopen and do it safely. Here's what he said going off on the media.
You got a lot of people in your profession who waxed poetically for weeks and weeks about how Florida was going to be just like New York. Wait 2 weeks, Florida's going to be next. Just like Italy, wait 2 weeks. Well, hell, we're 8 weeks away from that, and it hasn't happened. So we've succeeded, and I think that people just don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative, it challenges their assumption, so they got to try to find a boogeyman. Maybe it's that there are black helicopters circling the Department of Health. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
So, Jeff Rainford, there have been a little more than 2,000 people have died in the state of Florida. Meantime, 21,000 people in New York City, just Manhattan alone, have died. But somehow, Ron DeSantis is the evil boogeyman who's killing grandma and grandpa, and Andrew Cuomo is the hero in this. That's never really made sense to me at all. I actually think that I'm not going to tag Andrew Cuomo with all those deaths. If I want to put some blame somewhere, I'm going to put on Bill de Blasio, who on March 11th told people to go out and eat at the restaurants. And that was well into this thing. So, isn't Ron DeSantis right about this double standard?
It's proving a negative's hard. I mean, come on. Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. No, I think, look, I mean, it's really easy to say, oh, okay, nothing bad happened. Well, I mean, you're lucky because, you know, I mean, it could have just as easily.
Nobody's saying nothing bad happened. But how do you actually justify media coverage where everyone is, you know, hammering Brian Kemp? And I've got an article about how Georgia is going to become, you know, the killing fields in a couple of weeks. Same thing with Florida. If that doesn't happen, there are a lot of people that are going to look very, very stupid here moving forward, especially as we see these trends go down in other states as well. And I think more and more people on the West Coast of this country, maybe not even in here in the Midwest, although it'll occur, they're going to say, wait a second, we did all this for the East Coast of the country because they couldn't get their act together.
The only thing that bothers me in this double standard, and it's kind of what's been, you know, bother me about American politics, is people sort of filter out and they're like, oh, everybody says DeSantis is bad, and they send you three or four articles on Facebook, or everybody says this guy's good and they send you three or four articles. If you kind of read a lot and listen to a lot and watch a little bit, you actually see a pretty balanced version. Now, I will say, you watch the Today Show on NBC, and you don't see any kind of big criticism of DeSantis. Now, you watch MSNBC, and they're ripping the guy right and left because the people who want to see Republicans ripped go to MSNBC. Now, you want to see Democrats ripped, you go to Fox. So the problem is we got these 20% on these two extremes, left and right, who only want to read their little, you know, out of their little tribes. And then you got a kind of the rest of us in the middle who are just tell us what we need to know. We were going to treat this thing with respect, but we want to be able to live with it. We want to go back to work. And I think there's probably 60-70% of the American people who are tuning out the politics on the left and right, including the president, who does it as bad or worse than anybody, but also including MSNBC and CNN. And just tell us what we need to know to get on with our lives and live with this thing. And so what is wrong with American politics is starting to infect the debate over what do we do about coronavirus.
And I don't
all right, hang tight. Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, Jane Duker, Jeff Rainford, all on the panel this afternoon. We got to take a break. We're coming back with much more this afternoon. Two more segments to go.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
Welcome back. Segment number three of the Reardon Roundtable for this Friday afternoon. The former Lieutenant Governor of the state of Missouri, Peter Kinder, is with us this afternoon. Former Chief of Staff for Mayor Slay, Jeff Rainford, and Jay Duker with us. Jay, let me start with you, and let's get to a local issue involving the police in De Pere. You work for the city cops, right, in St. Louis. You are, despite your liberal tendencies on some issues, yeah, you are a supporter of officers. Look, this video gets out from what happened at Sam's Club. I don't think it looks very good for the police right now. But what I said was, is there's a lot of witnesses that were around. If you see that video that doesn't have the audio, I don't know what happened here. I have a hard time believing that if it was a, and I'll just say this, look, if it was a white couple, if it was me that had that happen to you, I'd be livid. Now, I don't know if I'd try to grab a fire extinguisher from the wall. I'd like to think that I wouldn't. That's one of the allegations by the police. But is this a money grab by this family, or do they have a case?
I mean, I think it depends. I think that all the information isn't out. I mean, this idea that everybody knew that this was their TV, I mean, I find it hard to believe that cops just, for no reason, just, you know, go arrest somebody. You know, it may be a close call. I mean, do I think criminal charges? I would have to see a lot more to believe that that's accurate. If this was some kind of racial targeting, it needs to be taken care of. But, you know, I'm 99% sure that we don't know all the facts yet. We've seen, video. I'm sure there's other video. I'm sure the store has, you know, security cam. I'm sure that
multiple
there's
going to
be police reports. I'm sure there's going to be witnesses who, you know, the people in the store I'm sure there's a tons of witnesses. There were actually on the videotape that played in the sound, there were people videotaping saying, well, he needs to stop resisting. I mean, there were people who at the time were saying, look, this is a problem. And, you know, so, you know, the truth is always somewhere in the middle. It's a far cry from what was going on to the jogger. I mean, that's getting, you know, worse by the day. So I think the jury is still out on this. And I would like the chance for these people to, you know, put up a defense before we make a decision.
Peter Kinder, you want to weigh in on this one?
I am not really up to speed on it, so I'll pass to my better informed panelists too.
That's okay. He's out. You can do that. You know, because you're out of the area, so you may not have been as dialed into that one. Jeff.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Jane. I really have a hard time trying to draw a conclusion based on what I see in the news. First of all, I've sort of become jaded about the accuracy of the news anyway. And even if they're doing their best, they clearly don't have all the information. So this one, as far as who's right, who's wrong, it's going to have to come out in the courts. I will say that overall, though, there is not an African-American person I've ever talked to about these issues who does not have a firsthand story of being treated badly by the police. And so, you know, and Mark, to your point, I can remember I drive like an old man now, but when I wasn't an old man and, like, you know, broke the speed limit, I'd get pulled over. And, you know, even if a cop gave me a little bitty attitude, I'd get all hacked off. So, you know, if you already are in a community where every single person you know has a story to tell about how they were at a minimum treated disrespectfully by whoever it is, by the police or by security guards or whatever it is, you can kind of see how they would be ready to jump to a conclusion and say the guys did something wrong. So, I mean, this whole issue of race is something someday we're going to have to figure out in our country. And I think the only way to do that is to have a lot of really hard, honest conversations where we just lay it out on the table. But until then, we're going to have misunderstanding after misunderstanding.
And one thing I would say, real quickly, is that the cops didn't arrive out of the blue. Somebody called the police. This wasn't, you know, this originated from a call from the store. So, I mean, you know, a lot of times cops get tagged with, you know, arriving on a scene when they've been dispatched there. And so I want to make sure, because that's happened a few times where cops are dispatched by a restaurant or by a store. And then, you know, things, you know, that doesn't mean it doesn't give them the right to treat people badly. But I'm saying that, you know, it's not always the police that are initiating the contact. And I think in this circumstance, it wasn't.
Yeah, well, a lot more facts need to come out about that one. Peter Kinder, I'll go to you with this one. The president tweeted yesterday this: many will disagree, but Fox News is doing nothing to help Republicans and me get reelected on November 3rd. Sure, there are some truly great people on Fox, but you also have some real garbage littered all over the network. People like dummy Juan Williams, Richard Goodstein, Donna Brazile, Neil Cavuto, he throws in there. Cavuto ripped him on the hydroxychloroquine thing. Now, as much as I'm, you know, a fan of freedom of tweeting, and we know that the president gets into trouble sometimes with tweets, I'm pretty sure it's not the role of Fox News to get the president or any Republicans elected. Obviously, it tilts one way, and MSNBC tilts another way, but that one struck me as odd. Now, he might be referring to the opinion people. I don't know. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, first of all, let's go back to when Fox News came on the scene. Rupert Murdoch and the genius executive, Roger Ailes, discovered a niche market, half the country, okay? Every other news, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and many other media organs are either firmly on the left or lean left. And we have the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and we have Fox News. And Fox News blows out the ratings every year. Month after month, they have for many, many years. And so the president is a little upset that some of their opinion commentators, who I think it's good to have on, I think it's good to have Goodstein on, I think it's good to have Donna Brazile on, I think it's good to have the other Juan Williams, who I happen to know personally, is a good guy, and I don't agree with him much when he voices his opinions, but I think it's good for balance. I don't think you see a comparable articulate bunch of conservatives on the other networks that I mentioned. I do think that Fox can fairly claim to be fair and balanced in that respect. Now, their news is to be distinguished from the opinion programs in the evenings. In the evening, you have the lineup, Martha, and then Tucker, and then Hannity, and then Laura Ingraham, and they are opinion in the evening. But Fox is straight down the middle on news, I maintain. Let me give you an example. Fox News is the one that reported George W. Bush's 1977 DWI first. They broke that news on the Thursday night before the election in 2000. They try real hard to be straight on their news.
Well, I think some people would scoff at that, but let me tell you something that I've been doing for the last 2.5 months because I've been at home, and I watch both. I flip back and forth. I listen in my car, and I would totally agree with you. If you just match up the CNN coverage during the day to the Fox coverage, it is more fair on Fox. But regardless, the president probably shouldn't be campaigning for the host to support him on Fox News, but he's going to probably keep doing that. I don't know. We're not even sure exactly what set him off on that tangent. It might have been Cavuto, or it might have been somebody else. I'm not sure.
Mark, some things would be better left unsaid. I do agree with that.
The one thing that I have been railing on, Mark, you're aware how I've been railing on it, is that I think people need to be very clear when they're being opinion and when they're being news. And I think there's a lot of mixing of that. If you want to be a news reporter, then you need to report the news. You need to abide by, you know, guidelines of truth in reporting and getting the other side and trying to be balanced. If you're an opinion person, you know, whatever, you can say whatever nonsense you want to spew out of your mouth. I get very concerned by the people who try to combine the two. And that to me is the most, and I think that erodes journalism and erodes people's faith in the news more than anyone. I mean, you know, and I think the people who blur the lines are the most dangerous. The ones that are just plainly opinion and it's obvious, you know, that's fine. And the ones that are news, but I think we've had too much of the blurring of the lines. And I do think that that has eroded both sides' belief in the news.
Rainford, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, so it seems like the president watches more cable TV than policy papers, and he probably watched one of those scripted shows about Roger Ailes, which basically said Roger Ailes was, you know, trying to get people elected, and Trump probably took it literally and said, hey, why isn't that still happening?
Probably.
Hang on, panel. We got to take one more break. We're coming back with more. Former Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, Jeff Rainford's on the panel this afternoon. Jane Duker back with more next on KMOX.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
One thing I meant to mention, panel, earlier in the show, and we were talking about opening up the churches. My good buddy, mi hermano Polo Sencio, who is on the Spanish language broadcast team with Benji Molina for the Cardinals, he's out in the Los Angeles area. He heard this news from the president. I think he interpreted it the proper way, and here's what he said on Twitter. So that means we can open and have gatherings at Our Lady of Chavez Ravine and at the Redbirds of the 11 Crowns Cathedral, asking for a very religious group of friends. Thank you. We'll hang up and listen on my radio. I think Polo got it exactly right, that's what they should do. But how? Let me go on the baseball front here. One of the things that made me more confident, and I've been pessimistic, is some of the news that came out this week, including the news that surfaces weren't as much of a risk. So on a scale of 1 to 10, Jeff Rainford, 10 being the highest level of confidence, what do you think about baseball and professional sports without fans maybe in a month and a half or so?
Well, without fans, I think that they ought to be doing it. I mean, you know, listen, one of the things that are going to happen, though, is we can't have I call them the cave people, the citizens against virtually everything. We can't have people complaining because the baseball players are getting tested, right? And they're taking tests away from people who need them and all of that nonsense. We need professional sports. Now, does everybody watch it? No. Those of you who don't watch it, go to the opera or whatever you do, but let us have the professional. Let them do what they got to do to bring it back. Now, as far as having fans go, I don't think that should be for a while. The one I get that we're finding all these ways not to get it. It seems like the way to get it is to have densely compact people, nursing homes, subways, baseball stadiums, that sort of thing. But I'm like, let them do what they got to do to have baseball. Don't make them be so cute so they don't get any criticism. Bring baseball, hockey, basketball back. We'll worry about the fans maybe next season or later, but let's get sports back.
Peter Kinder, 1 to 10, how confident?
How confident am I that we should bring it back? Or
that we will have it back?
I think we will have it back under the strictures and circumstances indicated, and I think we should. And by the way, I just want to say that, you know, as this whole thing has gone on and the modeling has been so far off the mark and we've been misled so many times and CDC has changed their advice so many times, one thing we've learned is that it's indoors that you get the virus. And when they packed families together indoors, that undoubtedly helped expose, as it did in nursing homes, some vulnerable people to getting the virus and to getting sick. It's outdoors, vitamin D, sunlight, fresh air. Go to the beach. The beach is probably one of the best places you can be to combat this virus, with sunshine, vitamin D, fresh air, salt, and
humidity.
All the things we enjoy
humidity
in the
actually,
summer.
Yeah, humidity actually, I think, might be a big part of that, which is one of the reasons, and maybe the only reason, Jane, I'm looking forward to getting into the upper 80s this weekend.
Oh, we need some good weather. I do think that would help. I think letting people out and having, we've had a lot of rain, and we're going to have a lot of rain this weekend, which is frustrating. But no, I think people need professional sports. I think there's enough of the population that watch one sport or another. But without that sort of distraction, I think you will have people. I think at some point people are going to revolt if they don't, you know, if you don't start easing this stuff in. I think people will revolt, and it will be a circumstance that might make things worse. Whereas if we're responsible and we, you know, and try to do as much as we can as safely as we can, I think you will keep people, you know, doing the right thing. I mean, you know, I wish there could be fans, but I don't think it's realistic. And I think we probably ought to let that go and let them start playing now and then worry about the crowds later. You know, because people.
One more topic here, Jeff. I'll start with you on this. Lori Loughlin and her husband were in court today. Actually, they were on a video hearing, pleading guilty to charges of fraud in the college admission scandal. Full House was a little after my time of watching shows like that, I'm guessing, for all the panel. But Aunt Becky, because I know she was Aunt Becky, Lori Loughlin, is going from Full House to the Big House. Now, that's unclear right now. The guilty plea still has to be accepted by the judge. The terms of the deal, 2 months in prison for Lori Loughlin. Massimo Giannulli, her husband, would get 5 months. There's a bunch of fines in here. Satisfied with this result of this massive scandal, Jeff Rainford?
Yeah, I think that jail time is appropriate. I have no negative feelings towards her. She seems like a okay person. I don't really know her husband. I think that this is the sort of thing where the biggest penalty that they have suffered is shame, and the amount of shame that they've had is immense. I don't think, though, that no time would be appropriate. So I think 2 to 5 months is fine. I also don't think this is the kind of thing where they ought to, you know, especially as the amount of shame that they've had to go through and their kids have to go through. I don't think 3, 4, 5 years is appropriate either. So it seems fine to me.
Yeah,
this is going to end up costing them with the fines and with what they paid almost $1 million. Probably then, if you want to look at maybe some lost income, they could have just given that to each of their kids and said, hey, you're set for life. Don't worry about college. Right.
Or start a business. Right. Do something. Right. I mean, you know, it's hard for me to. I mean, I think 2 to 5 months is fine. I mean, you know, we're letting people out of prison here if you've shot someone. So, I mean, you know, it's all over the board right now. I mean, that's the thing that's frustrating to me is I think people start to look at this and say, now, wait a minute. You know, you kill a grandmother, a hit and run. You get out of jail, come out, get shot, shoot someone. And then, you know, we're all focused on, look, they should, the privilege, the nightmare that they ensued, they're going to pay. And I think going to jail is fine, but we cannot forget that we're letting violent people out. And that is a problem.
Well, we're out of time, Peter, but I will say this, because you probably sensed this along the last hour, man, Jane and Jeff sound like they're, you know, on our side on some of these issues. I'm a little surprised.
I'm delighted to hear Jane, my good friend. And I'll just say I agree with her on that. And I'll say one thing more on the Lori Loughlin and her husband and these other people. Their guilty pleas are valid, good guilty pleas. Unlike General Flynn, who is going to be sprung from his guilty plea that was wrongly entered. And that Judge Sullivan, is going to get the extraordinary writ of mandamus commanding him to accept the guilty plea that he seems to be reluctant to accept. General Flynn will be fully vindicated.
Man, just to get that in at the end when we're talking about Full House and the college admission scandal, that is expertise.
That's a pivot.
Peter Kinder, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Peter, we'll have you back. Thank you. Rainford, I'll see you soon on the golf course. Jane's going to hang out in the next hour. Jessica Radloff, my friend from Glamour Magazine. She's a St. Louis native and very connected with Hollywood. HBO Max kicks off next week. I already paid for this stupid thing. Why do we need another streaming service? I don't know. We'll find out if it's worthwhile. 3:20 this afternoon. Carol has the news coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.